Okay, so apologies that Dina isn't here. She had an appointment which she couldn't change. So I'm filling in. So I thought, rather than do the chumash that you're doing with her, I'm just going to do something inside in the chumash and explain something to do with the parsha. So it's a combined chumash and parsha here, if that's okay. So it's page 820. Because this parsha is Parshas Korach. Page 820 in the Artsko Chumash. So of course the big part of the parsha deals with the revolution that Korach made against Moshe Rabbeinu. It was a terrible machloikis. Eventually he was punished and killed. But together with his family and his companions and so on. But it's a complicated parsha and a very powerful and important parsha. And can be understood on many different levels. So I thought what we'd do first is let's read together a few psukim. I'll read them clearly. Unfortunately, I don't have it on the computer to share with the screen, but I will read it slowly and trying to understand it properly. Okay, so the pasuk says, "Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohos ben Levi." Korach took. Now it doesn't say what he took. He took. Who was Korach? The son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohos, the son of Levi. So he took something, and also he took with him v'doson v'aviram. He took Doson and Aviram b'nei Eliav, who were the sons of Eliav. Now, Doson and Aviram, by the way, were very well-known troublemakers. Yeah, they had made trouble already in Mitzrayim. According to many, they were the two people. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu, he killed an Egyptian, right? Remember, you know the story of Moshe Rabbeinu killed an Egyptian in Egypt? Then the next day, he found two Jews fighting. And he said to the one, "Russia, why do you hit your friend?" And he says, Are you going to accuse me like you accused? Are you going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? And Moshe Rabbeinu could sense that this was trouble, and they were going to inform on him, and they did. And Paro captured him, and miraculously Moshe Rabbeinu escaped and went to Midian, right? But who were those two people? Doson and Aviram, right?
Can I ask?
Yeah, please.
Sorry, because it's always worrying me. When Moshe was at the burning bush, Hashem said to him, "Go back to Egypt," and the people that were insulted you, are gone, are no more there. But they were there.
It's a very, very good question. Yeah. I think if I remember correctly, Rashi says that actually they weren't there. They were still there, but they used to be wealthy and they become completely poor. And it says in the Gemara that only Choshev Kamei, so a very poverty-stricken person is like a dead person. Because that's how difficult it is to go through poverty. So I think that's what it means. They've lost their prominence, but they managed to make plenty of trouble afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Always worried me.
No, but it means that they don't have any power with Paro. So in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was safe in terms of going back and not getting caught that way. Okay. But it's a good question. Okay. Who else did he take? He took V'Oin ben Peles. He took Oin ben Peles, who later on disappears because his wife saved him at the last minute. It's a good wife, the role of a good wife. She saved him from not joining into the Machlaikas. And then B'nai Reuven, these were all people from the tribe of Reuven, and he took, as we'll see later, he took actually a lot of people with him. How many people? It says the next pasuk, "Vayokumu lifnei Moshe," they stood up to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Va'anoshim ibnei Yisrael chamishim u'masayim," there were 250 of the Jewish people. These were great people. Korach ran a very good Machlaikas. I'll tell you a story that I heard once in a second. Nesiyei Eido, these were leaders. Kriya Moyeds, appointed people, Anshei Shem, men of repute, men of prominence, right? Okay, so a few things we've done. First of all, what does it mean, Vayikach? He took. What did he take? It doesn't say what he took.
Leadership.
Sorry?
Leadership.
He didn't take, he challenged, he wanted the leadership. What does it mean he took? So it's interesting because normally Vayikach does mean he took. But if you look in just in the side, you know, you see the side, the Targum, on the side of the Chumash, on the top. See what it says, Unculus?
Yeah.
No, on top of the page, right? So that's the Targum, the translation of Unkelus in Aramaic that Unkelus made. Unkelus was a great tzaddik, and he made this Targum, he made this translation in Aramaic, but he did it with divine inspiration. So always, normally he translates the word Vayikach in Aramaic, V'nosi. V'nosi means, and he took. Here it says, V'ispalag. And he divided. He took himself away from everyone else. That's what it means, Vayikach. He created a machloikas. Right? Created a machloikas. Now, I just want to share with you two things. First, a little story, and second of all, of art. So a little story was, I once heard, when I was in high school, we had a Rosh Hashiva, his name was Rav Aaron Pollack, a blessed memory. He passed away, he moved to Manchester afterwards, and he passed away. And he was full of stories. He knew many, many stories of tzaddikim. And one of the great things of being in his class was always, he would always tell us stories. And I mean, he was always a big Talmud Chacham, but he always would demonstrate things with stories. And he told us a story about the Yismach Moshe. Yismach Moshe was a very, very great tzaddik, right? A great Hasidic Rebbe, a very great tzaddik. And Yismach Moshe, you know, some tzaddikim, they were able to tell you which, like, you know, so we believe in Gilgul, believe that the Neshamas come down again and they're reincarnated and so on. And some tzaddikim were able to tell you who they were in previous lifetimes, right? For example, just to digress for a second, there was a great Rebbe also called the Apterov. The Apterov says that in one of his previous reincarnations, he was a Kohen Gadol, he was a high priest in the Beis HaMikdosh, right? And so much so that when he would daven on Yom Kippur, Chazor HaSashatz, you know, we daven on Yom Kippur, we talk about the service of the Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdosh on Yom Kippur. And one of the things we say a sentence called the Kach Hoyo Omer. And this is what he used to say, the Kohen Gadol. We're talking about when he would sprinkle the blood, he would count in a certain way. We say, the Kach Hoyo Omer, Achas, Achas, Ve, Achas, Achas, Ushtayim, right? So he used to say, up to Rob, when he would daven, he would say, the Kach Hoyisi Omer. This is what I used to say, as we said, because he was a Kohen Gadol. So this Yismach Moshe, he said in the previous Gilgul, he was from the Dor Deah, he was in the generation of the Midbar. He went out of Mitzrayim. And he was from the generation that went out of the Midbar. So the Chassidim asked him a question, if that's the case, tell us please, when Korach came along and launched the whole rebellion, whose side were you on? Right? Whose side were you on? Korach's side or Moshe's side? So he said the following, because the Korach story is a very, very complicated story. On the surface, Korach was an evil person, he ran a revolution, he just made a machloikas, and he was up for grabbing power, which on one level is correct. That's the way it turned out to be. But Korach, you should understand, it says before Korach was the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohos. He was a great person. He was a person that carried the Oran. And he came with a whole philosophy. And the philosophy was wrong, but it was sort of philosophy. It was deep, as we'll see, which we're going to come develop during the Shira today, right? He came with a whole philosophy. And he said, the Yismach Moshe said, that you have to understand that there was a moment in this whole revolution that the entire Klal Yisrael was undecided. That's how strong his machlokes was. They weren't sure if Korach's right or Moshe Rabbeinu's right. That's how strong his machlokes was. Because we'll see, it was a deep machlokes, it was a philosophical machlokes, it wasn't so simple. And we'll try and develop that a bit today. But if you look at the very, very first Rashi, Rashi says, Vayikach Korach, Rashi starts the parasha with a very strange expression. He says, Parsha zu, Yofo nidreshes b'medrash Rabbi Tanchuma. This parsha is very beautifully nidreshes, beautifully explained, like drosha, right? Like a drosha. In the medrash of Rabbi Tanchuma. What does Rashi mean? Okay, so it's true that Parshas Korach has a tremendous amount of midrashim. There's so much to say. And many rabbonim have developed many, many drushes about Parshas Korach, right? They tell a story about the story when I was a kid. They tell a story about a magid. You know what a magid is? A magid is someone who goes around giving drushes. There was one magid that he wasn't so knowledgeable. And he only had one drusha. It was a drusha on Parshas Korach. On this parsha. Right? So he used to go, what would he do? He'd come to a shul, but what, not every week is Parshas Korach, right? So he would come to a shul, and he would get up to give a drasha, and he would orchestrate that before he gave the drasha, his handkerchief would fall down on the floor, that he should have to bend down and get it. And there was some Yiddish expression, which I don't know exactly how it goes, but something to do with like when something bad happens, you say, all the enemies of the Yidden should be punished like Korach. Right? That's an expression of some sort, I don't know exactly how it goes. And then as soon as he would say that, he would say, you know, and talking about Korach, And then he would go on to give the drasha about Korach. That's how he did it. Every shtetl he went to, he would always give the same drasha about Korach. Anyway, but there's a lot of drashas on Korach. So Rashi says, this parasha, yofen nidreshes, is very beautifully darshaned, very beautifully explained in the Medrash, right? So one sort of vort, what's Rashi really trying to tell us? Rashi is saying like this. This is actually a very tough parasha. It's a parasha full of machloikas, full of division, full of conflict. Says Rashi, parasha zu, this parasha, Yofet, it's a very beautiful parasha. You know when it's a beautiful parasha? When nidreshes, when it's explained in the Medrash. That's when it's a beautiful parasha. When it's put into practice, which unfortunately very often it is, when there's machloikas and there's conflict, then it's not a beautiful parasha anymore. It's Yofet, when is it a beautiful parasha? When nidreshes, when it's explained, when you talk about it, when you study it. But chas v'sholem, not when it's put into practice. When it's put into practice, it becomes ugly because it's a parasha full of machlaikas. Even though it was a deep machlaikas, but it was a machlaikas. Okay. Now, let's just go a little bit more in the psukim. Posuk Gimel. So what happened with Korach and his 250 people? Says the Posuk Gimel, the third Posuk, Vayikohalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. They gathered against Moshe and Aaron. Vayomru aleim, and they said to them, Rav lochem, enough of you, enough of all this power. Ki cholo eilo ha'edo kulam kedoshim. Everyone is equal. Umasoicham Hashem, and Hashem is amongst them. Umadua tisnasu akahal Hashem. He said to Moshe Rabbeinu, why are you exalting yourself? Why are you taking leadership? Why do you make yourself more important than all other Jewish people? Why is it only you that's a leader? Why is it only Kohen Gadol? Is Aaron a Kohen? We're all holy. We all stood the same Torah. We heard the same Torah at Har Sinai. We heard the same commandments from Hashem. We're all exactly the same. What is the story? Why is the leadership here, right? Okay. Now, it's a very complicated story on just to understand, because Rashi brings, it's not so simple to understand exactly what Korach wanted, right? Because if you look in Mefarshim, if you look in the if you look in Rashi, and if you look in the Mefarshim, and you look in the Gemaras, you'll find out so many different things that Korach wanted, it doesn't seem clear actually what his problem was. But it seems the following. He was triggered by, well, something deeper, but on the surface, he was triggered by the fact that, it says like this, that Levi, right, the son of Yaakov, Levi, the tribe of Levi, Levi himself had three sons, Gershon, Kohos and Merari, right? Kohos was one of the important sons. Kohos had also four sons. First one was Amram. The next one was Elitzophon. The next one was Yitzhar, the father of Korach. And the next one was Elitzophon or something, right? So what happened was like this. Amram was the son of Kohos, right? Amram's two children, Moshe and Aaron, became the leaders of Klal Yisrael, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rebbe, the Rav of Klal Yisrael, and Aaron became the Kohen Gadol. So he said, then there was also a specific leader of the tribe of Levi. Who did that become? Elitzophon ben Uziel. Sorry, Uziel was the third son of Amram. Elitzophon, the son of Uziel. So Korach says, hold on a second. Kohos had four sons. The oldest is Aaron, Amram. Amram already, his two sons took leadership. It only makes sense that the next post of leadership should be Uziel's son. Right? So it should be Yitzhar's son, I mean, his father. And instead it was the next son. It became Elitzophon ben Uziel. So therefore he got upset and he started to reach a whole rebellion. But his rebellion was expressed in the fact that actually we don't need any leadership. Because Kulam Kadoshim, everyone's holy. Everyone's all, so why is there only one Kohen Gadol? I want to become a Kohen Gadol too. Why is there one leader? I want to become a leader too. Right? And that's why he fought. That's also why he seemed to fight against Moshe Rabbeinu, but he also fought against Aaron HaKohen, and he wanted to become a Kohen Gadol, which is why, and let's have a look. Right? Next pasuk, Dalet says, Vayishma Moshe Rabbeinu heard, Vayipol al ponov, and he fell on his face. And then he said the following, Vayedaber el Korach, he spoke to Korach. Velkol Adosa and his whole congregation, his old men, Lamer saying, Boiker, right? You'll see. V'yoyda, wait till the morning. V'yoyda Hashem, and Hashem will let everyone know. Esa Shaloi, who is his? Vesakodosh, Vehikriv Elov, and who is holy, and he'll come close. Hashem has chosen Yakriv a love, he will bring close to him. In other words, wait till the morning. Why did he tell him to wait till the morning? So two ideas. First of all, Moshe Rabbeinu hoped that throughout the night, Korach will do tshuva. He'll calm down, right? He'll calm down. Second of all, Moshe Rabbeinu said about the morning the following way. He said like this. Just think about the morning. And think about how Hashem created the world, right? Hashem created the world. There's night, there's day. Night is a time for the moon. Day is a time for the sun. They don't mix. Everything has their role. Everything has their position. Everything has their function and their purpose, right? So too, he says, you want to become a Kohen Gadol. Why do you want to become a Kohen Gadol? You can't become a Kohen Gadol. You're a Levi. And even if you're a Kohen, there's only one Kohen Gadol. Why? Because just like in the world, there are different parts of creation that don't mix, and each part of creation has its function and purpose, so too among people. Each person has their role. Right? In Yiddishkeit, that's the way it is. Equality doesn't mean that we all do the same thing. Equality means we all have the same value. That's what it means. So he says, nothing wrong with you, but you can't be a Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol is Aaron. He was chosen to be the Kohen Gadol. Moshe Rabbeinu is a Moshe Rabbeinu. You're a Levi and you carry the Aaron HaKoyah, the Aaron Kodesh and so on. So he's trying to say, learn from the morning and the night. You see how it changes each day. It didn't actually work because Korach actually used the night, says the Medrash, to rev up the whole crowd. He went from tent to tent, gaining votes kind of thing, right? Campaigning. And he came back the next morning fully emboldened. But what did he tell him to do in the morning? Moshe Rabbeinu says, in the morning, all 250 of you will take a pan. You'll make a Torah, you'll put on incense, you'll offer it up. You'll go into the Kodesh, you'll go into the Holy of Holies to bring incense, something that only the Kohen Gadol could do. And we'll see if you survive. Whoever survives is right. Whoever survives will be the Kohen Gadol. Right? Okay. So they're all blinded by their greed and they're blinded by their machloikas and they all participated and at the end, they were all punished. Okay. Now, how did Korach present his argument? So there's a famous medrash, part of it is brought in Rashi, and this is what I want to focus on a bit, where Korach came to Moshe Rabbeinu with these 250 men. So this is the part that Rashi brings. And he came with talesim. You know what I'm talking about? This medrash. It came with talesim, which were colored with tcheles. You know, originally, tzitzis, the mitzvah of tzitzis was on a four-cornered garment. You put tzitzis, but you also dyed some of the strings blue. Some people do it today as well. There's a whole controversy about it, the whole discussion, whether we have rediscovered tcheles or not. Separate discussion, a very beautiful discussion. But anyway, that's what happened, right? So he came with 250 talesim, which were all colored tcheles. Not the tzitzis. They didn't have tzitzis. But instead, they colored the garment with tcheles. Yeah? And he put the following argument to Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, a talis that's all been dyed with tcheles, does it still need the tzitzis? Right? That was his question. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, yeah, of course. Still needs tzitzis. It's a four-cornered garment. Needs tzitzis. So they all started to laugh. If you have a big garment that doesn't have tcheles, but it needs tzitzis to absolve it from its obligation. So then if you have a whole garment that itself is techeles, so where do the tzitzis for? That's what they said. Okay. That's the part Rashi brings down, but the Medrash continues. And the Medrash says, then they ask another question. They said like this, Bayis mole svarim, a house that's full of books. Now books means, in those days, books means holy books, books that are written on parchment, like a Sefer Torah or Tefillin or something like that, right? But it means a Sefer Torah. So if you have, because in those days, the only written part of the Torah was a Sefer Torah, right? So Korach said to Moshe Rabbeinu, if you have a house that is full of Svarim, full of Sefer Torah, do you still need the scroll on the door? Do you still need a mezuzah? Right? The mezuzah just has two paragraphs of the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, of course you need a mezuzah. What's going to do with it? A house needs a mezuzah. What's the difference how many Svarim you have in the house? So they start to laugh again. They said, if a whole house that's empty, could be taken care of by one little scroll on the door. If the whole house is full of Sifrei Torah, how much more so? It should be okay. What do you need the scroll on the door for? Right? And they all start to laugh. Okay. So the question is, first of all, what did he mean by all of this? Right? What's this? He was mocking Moshe Rabbeinu, but Korach wasn't just a mocker. Korach was actually a very smart person, as I said before. He was one of the great people who learned Torah and he carried the Aron Kodesh when they would travel. And he meant something deeper than just mocking. And if he just wanted to mock anyway, like, why make the same point twice? In other words, he made his point. It seems from the Medrash, these two arguments are exactly the same. You've got a garment, it needs tzitzis. You've got a house, it needs a mezuzah. So the garment, if it's full of tchelis, shouldn't need a tzitzis. A house that's full of svarim shouldn't need a mezuzah. So it's exactly the same argument. So why make the point twice? First of all, what exactly did he mean by this argument? What's the depth of it? And second of all, why make the same point twice? Question clear? Yeah? Okay. So I want to share with you a deep idea about actually what Korach was all about. What was he trying to, and what couldn't he, what two things couldn't he hold his head at the same time? So I'll share with you on one level and then hopefully take it even deep on a Kabbalistic level. So it's interesting that in the Torah, the Parsha of Korach comes right after the Parsha of Shlach, last week's Parsha, right? And according to many opinions, that's actually the way it happened, correct? So Parsha Shlach happens, the Meraglim are sent, they come back, they talk negatively about the land of Israel, Hashem is upset, is punished, they punish the Jewish people, you got to stick another 40 years in the Midbar and then we'll take you into Eretz Israel. Okay. What happens next? Korach launches a rebellion. So the simple question is like this. If Korach was a troublemaker, don't forget, the Yidden left Mitzrayim Pesach time, right? Shlach only happened, you know when Shlach happened? You know when the Meraglim left? Sorry? 28th of Sivan, which is this coming week actually, right? It's always around when we reach Shlach actually. Right? 28th of Sivan, which is in a few days. Thursday, I think it is. Thursday is 28th of Sivan. That's when they went for 40 days and they came back on Erev Tisha B'Av, right? That's famous thing. And then Korach, and then they get punished, and then Korach launches a rebellion. So Korach must have done it somewhere at the end of Av or something, right? And the question is why? Moshe, if he's upset with Moshe Rabbeinu, if there's an issue with the Kohen Gadol, why wait till right? So this is like a year and a half after Pesach. I'm talking about, it's not the first Erev Tisha B'Av, it's the second Erev Tisha B'Av. Right? Because don't forget, I should have clarified that. The Eden went out on Pesach. Moshe Rabbeinu went on the mountain for 40 days. They got the Torah on Shavuos. Moshe Rabbeinu goes on the mountain for 40 days. They come back, they serve the golden calf. He went up for another two sets of 40 days. And learned the Torah and tried to get forgiveness from Hashem. At the end of the third 40 days, which is Yom Kippur, Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, Hashem forgave them. After Yom Kippur, Hashem says, now I want you to build a Mishkan. A taste called Rosh Chodesh Nisan to build a Mishkan. Right? That's when Aaron HaKohen actually becomes the Kohen Gadol. But Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader, Aaron HaKohen is already the Kohen Gadol. And then at the end of Sivan, they send spies. So what is Korach waiting for? He's upset with Kohen Gadol. He should have done it right after Pesach. Or after Rosh Chodesh Nissan, as soon as Kohen Gadol, or after the first Pesach, or Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader, why are you waiting? Why are you waiting so long to make your trouble? But the answer is like this. We have to go back in something in last week's parasha. Last week's parasha went like this. When the spies are sent, Rashi tells us, Kulam Anoshim Roshei B'nei Yisrael Eimah. The Pasuk says they were all considered Anoshim, they're all prominent men. All 12 spies were very prominent. In fact, do you know that we learn the idea of a minion from the spies? Do you know that? How do we know you have to have a minion? Because how do you know the 10 minion is a how do you know 10 is a minion? Because later when Hashem is upset with the Meraglim, he wasn't upset with Yeshua and Kolev. Sorry? There were 10 people left. And Hashem said, Ad Mosai Le'edo Harazois. How long can I take this evil congregation? So we know a congregation is a minion. But it's very strange. We learn the idea of a minion when we say Kedusha and we say Kaddish and Baruch Hu and Daven with a minion. We learn it from 10 evil people, right? The answer is they weren't that evil. They were prominent men. They were bad people. So what was their mistake?
And Stillman and Gomorrah, didn't he also say if you
had 10? Yes. So Avraham Avinu, if you have 10 people, then you shouldn't, yeah. Okay, so Avraham Avinu already knew that 10 was a thing, but what's our source, halachic source? Right? It's from the Chumash, from Meraglim. The answer is the Meraglim were actually great people, but they made a very fundamental mistake. What was their mistake? Mistake was that they saw what's happening in the Midbar. They saw that in the Midbar, in the desert, the Yidden are living a very deep spiritual life. Let's understand how they lived, right? The man came from heaven, so they didn't have to worry about food. The Anani Akova, the clouds of glory, laundered their clothes and killed all the snakes and the scorpions and took away the mountains that were dangerous. So they were able to travel with ease. So what did Eden do all day? They sat in Koilu. They davened and they learned. And they had Moshe Rabbeinu as their teacher. What could be better? You don't have to worry about Parnassa. You don't have to worry about anything else. Right? You have Moshe Rabbeinu as your Rosh HaKoil and giving Shurim every day. Amazing. What an existence. You're closest to Hashem than everyone's ever been. Which, by the way, is the reason that the generation of the Midbar is called the Doir Deya. They're the generation of great insight. They were the people who mamash understood Hashem in a very deep way, right? And then the Meraglim knew, you're going to Eretz Yisrael, suddenly the money's going to stop. You're going to have to plow the land and sow the land. You're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to get into Parnassa. It's going to be an agricultural and capitalistic society where people are going to compete with each other. People are going to be successful, hopefully. They're going to become arrogant. They're going to, the whole thing, and they're going to spiral out of control, spiritually speaking, correct? Which, by the way, actually happened. It's not like their fears were unfounded. They actually happened eventually, right? Ended up serving Avodah Zarah even in Israel. So they thought to themselves, what do we need this tzaddis for? Let's stay in the Midbar. Hashem chose us a nation. We'll stay in the Midbar. We'll learn Torah. We'll daven. We'll close to Hashem. It'll be beautiful. And that's why they talked down the land so that people shouldn't want to go in, so they should stay in the Midbar. And by the way, at a certain level, they got what they wanted. They ended up in the Midbar for 40 years. The punishment was they realized what kind of mistake they made and that they were now there in a wrong way, right? So what was their mistake? The mistake is they missed the point. The mistake was that their fears are well-based. But what is the purpose of creation? Not just to learn Torah and to daven. The purpose of creation is to bring Hashem into the world. You have to go and engage with the Gashmias of the world. In other words, you have to go into the world of action. You have to do mitzvahs with physical things. You have to put a mezuzah with a physical piece of parchment. You have to do the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael. You have to give maaser. You have to give truma. You have to give peah, leket, shikha. You have to bring karbanos in Eretz. All these things you have to put on tefillin, take it. It's about elevating the land. It's about elevating the physical land. That's what it's about. Is it more complicated? Of course, but that's what Hashem really wants. Yeah? And that's why they were punished, because they made that fundamental mistake. They came from a good place, but really made this unbelievable mistake. Comes Korach and says like this. Oh, Korach saw what happened. So he comes to Moshe Rabbeinu exactly, and he says what it says at the end of the pasuk. He says to Moshe Rabbeinu, now I've got a complaint. Up until now, I kind of thought a bit like the Meraglim. I thought that the spiritual world is the most important, right? Spiritual is the most important, yeah? And in the spiritual world, I understood the hierarchy. This is the word. Listen carefully. I understood that in the spiritual world, not everyone's the same. The spiritual heights that Moshe Rabbeinu is able to achieve is very different than the spiritual heights I'm able to achieve. And therefore, in the spiritual world, there is different levels. There's a Moshe Rabbeinu who can teach what others don't know, right? All these things. So in the spiritual world, I fully get the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Kohen Gadol of Aaron HaKohen, I get that. Suddenly, the Meraglim story happens, right? And what does Moshe Rabbeinu tell the Jewish people from Hashem? That actually, no, Yiddishkeit is actually not about spirituality. Yiddishkeit is about mitzvahs. Yiddishkeit is about elevating the physical world. And you elevate the physical world through action, through mitzvahs, through the 630 mitzvahs that we all do, which majority of are in the world of action, in the world of maisa, as I said, right? He says, that's the main thing of Yiddishkeit. So what do we need you for? Your tefillin and my tefillin is the same thing. You understand? The way you daven is a big difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and a simple yid. Moshe Rabbeinu understands much more the meaning of davening. Right? Putting on tefillin, Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillin is the same as tefillin as mine. Lighting a Shabbos candle, doesn't matter who you are, the biggest spiritual tzaddikus in the world or a simple woman who has Shabbos candles, same candle. In the world of action, we're all exactly the same. So what do we need you for? Yeah? Now let's go back to the mezuzah. Sorry, to the tzitzit, I mean, first. That's his first argument. His first argument is like this. He comes with a talus and he says, the talus itself is good. What do I need tzitzit for? So, al pi kabbalah, when you put on a tzitzis, when a man wears tzitzis, the garment represents mitzvahs, and the tzitzis itself, the strings, represent Torah learning. Why so? Because mitzvahs are called makifim. Most mitzvahs are called like garments. We don't internalize the mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are around us. They surround us. They encompass us, right? We put on tefillin in our hands. We put on mezuzah. We don't wear shatnez. All these things. It's all about the things that are around us, right? Mostly. And that's why many places in Kabbalah, tzitzis are compared to a beggar, to a garment. Just like we need food and we have a garment, the garment part is the mitzvahs. What is the tzitzis itself? So we know that there are 8 strings on every corner. And the 8 strings times 4 is 24. Sorry, is 32, I mean. Right? 8 times 4 is 32. And in Kabbalah, there's this idea of Lamed Beis Nesivois Chochmah, that there are 32 paths of wisdom. Right? Wisdom is something you have to, when you understand something, you have to break it down. Similar to the separation of the tzitzis. Like each strand is different. You've got to break down a concept. And in Kabbalah, there's this idea of being able to acquire wisdom in 32 different ways. So therefore, the strings of the tzitzis represents the 32 paths of wisdom. So Korach said, I just heard from the Meraglim, up until now I understood that Torah learning is the main thing. Spirituality is the main thing. Okay, so I understand tzitzis. But now you just told me by the Meraglim, what did we discover last week by the Meraglim? That actually, no, the main part of Yiddishkeit is the world of action. The mitzvah is actually the main thing. How you bring Hashem into the physical world. If that's the case, if I have the beged, if I have already the garment, what I need the tzitzis for? Right? What I need the tzitzis for? I have action, we have mitzvahs. What do I have to learn for?
To remind you to follow the commandments.
Okay, that's just a functional thing, but there's no... It's not an end in itself. In other words, the end in itself about delving into Torah and analyzing it and swimming in the spiritual realm of Torah, that seems superfluous. We don't need that anymore if the main thing is bring Hashem into the world. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, you're making a big mistake. Yeah, mitzvahs are very important, but actually Torah learning, the Talmud Torah connected kolom, we still put a major emphasis on Torah, right? We still put a major emphasis on Torah. Torah is of prime importance. Of course you need Torah. To which Korach answers the question about the mezuzah. And if you analyze it, it's an opposite question. It's not the same thing. It's completely the opposite. He says, so make up your mind, says Korach. So Torah learning is important. I'm going to reverse the question. If you have a house that's full of Sefer Torahs, what does Sefer Torah represent? Learning. If you have a house that's full of learning, person that's fully immersed and fully saturated with learning, what do you need the mezuzah on the door? Mezuzah is a mitzvah. What do you need the mitzvah for? Make up your mind. Mezuzahs are important. Mitzvahs are important. The Torah learning is important. Spirituality is important. So I thought for the Meraglim that if you have a talis, if you have mitzvahs, you don't need Torah learning. So then you and me are equal. What do we need you for? Moshe Rabbeinu says, no. Of course you need leadership because you need spirituality. You need Torah learning. I need Torah learning. So then if you got a house full of Sefer Torahs, then you got a house full of learning. What do you need mitzvahs for? What do you need mezuzah for? It's an opposite question. It sounds the same, but it's completely the opposite. Right?
So what's the answer?
Oh, it's the answer. Answer's like this. Oh, very good question. Very good question. Yeah. So the answer is as follows. Answer is, and it's a deep answer, and this is what Korach didn't get. Answer is that you need both. But you need both in a particular way. And I'm going to explain something amazing soon. Maybe I've explained to you before, but it's an amazing idea. It's one of my favorite Divrei Torah. So, Bahashgacha Pratis, this week's share is Korach, so I can share with you one of my favorite Divrei Torah. The purpose of creation is elevating the physical world and being in the physical world and bringing Hashem into the physical world. However, the only way, which means like this, that you have to have the world of action. You have to be in the world. You have to engage in the world. And you have to elevate the world. Which is, first of all, through mitzvahs, but actually not only mitzvahs. In fact, it's more than just mitzvahs. It's about also bringing Hashem into every part of the world. Every part of how we exist. The way we eat, the way we sleep, the way we do business. Right? It says in there's a saying of Chazal, Kol Ma'asecha L'Shem Shemayim. that all your actions should be for the sake of heaven. And behold, in all your ways, you should be able to reveal Hashem, not only in the mitzvah, in everything that you do. A businessman should be able to show that he has mezuzah on the door, he's got a tzedakah box in his office, he's an honest person, he brings Hashem into his business. We bring Hashem into the way we eat, into the way we sleep. Everything has to be about Hashem. That's what really is, bro. However, in order to do that, we have to first go through, we have to spiritualize ourselves first. There's a fascinating Gemara that the Gemara says how a person should conduct their day. It's a formula, right? The Gemara says like this: when a person gets up in the morning, the first thing they have to do is they have to daven. Right? Shetehei, as the Lashon in the Gemara is, Shetehei tfilosi smucha lemitosi. My bed should be near my prayer, which means you daven first thing in the morning, right? That doesn't mean you can't daven later. That means that's the formula. You daven, connect to Hashem. Then says the Gemara, be beisak neses le beisa medrash. From the shul, you go to the study hall. You have to learn Torah. Then, when you've learned Torah, then you go into the world, haneg bohem minag derech eretz. Then you do business. You earn a living. What does it mean? What's the Gemara trying to tell us? So, I'll tell you like a famous little story. The story goes like this. It says there was once a Hasidic Rebbe that he called one of his Talmidim, one of his Hasidim, and he told him, I want you to leave. He was enjoying it. He was living next to the Rebbe. I want you to leave. I want you to go to a far-flung place to bring Torah there, whatever. He says to his Rebbe, what do you mean? I don't want to leave. I love it here. I'm inspired here. I watch the way you daven. I learn from you. This is beautiful, right? So his Rebbe says, no, your mission is to leave, to go to some far-flung area, spread Torah there. Once in a while, you can come back to refresh your batteries, to recharge your batteries, but your place is somewhere else. So he sees that he's getting nowhere with his Rebbe. He's going to have to leave. He has no choice, right? But he did see one glimpse of hope. He heard the Rebbe say that once in a while you can come back and recharge your batteries, right? So he says to his Rebbe, okay, no problem, I'm going, but tell me, how often can I come back and recharge my batteries? So his Rebbe told him like this, that when you go, as long as you can't stand it there and you're uncomfortable and you're yearning to come back, you can stay there. The minute you get comfortable, come running back. It's a very deep story. Why? So I'll tell you like this. You see, the way it works is like this. Our job in this world is to reveal Hashem in the physical world, right? What does that mean on a deeper level? It means that we have a situation where there's light and when there's darkness, right? In the upper worlds, we say if he only wanted spirituality, he didn't need this world. Because Hashem has lots of other worlds. In Kabbalah, we learn about higher spiritual worlds, right? And those worlds are not as dark as this world. No, those worlds, Hashem is much more obvious. There's light in those worlds. There's aur, right? This world is a world of darkness. What's our job? To reveal Hashem in the darkness, correct? Now, what's the depth behind that? Because we know that Hashem is not limited to being only when there's light. Hashem is as much present in this dark world as it is in the infinite worlds. Very, very fundamental concept in Hasidic teachings, in Kabbalah and so on. Why? Because Hashem can be manifested, Hashem can be expressed in darkness as well, not only light. There's a very famous Kabbalistic, there was a very famous Mekubal, a Kabbalist, his name was called Avodah Sakoidesh. And he said the following, he said an amazing thing. He said, you know, Hashem is infinite, right? Hashem is completely infinite. But what does that mean, he's infinite? He said, because Hashem is infinite means that he has the power not just to be infinite, but if he wants, he can be finite also. He says, why? Hashem is infinite. What do you mean he can be finite? Because if you say, he said, that Hashem is only infinite and cannot be finite, you've just made him finite. It's a deep idea. In other words, you've defined him. You said he can only be infinite. That's a definition. That means he can't be something else. You're making him finite. Hashem is above all definition. Hashem can be in light, he can be in darkness, he can be finite, he can be infinite, he can be limited, he can be unlimited, he can be both together. He's transcendent. Right? Which means Hashem is no less in this world as he is in the worlds where he's revealed. But he's not obvious to us. He's not obvious to the world. Our job is to reveal that Hashem is in this world as much as it is in the light worlds. Yeah, am I making sense? Are we good so far? Okay. What's the problem? The problem is like this. As soon as we start to engage in darkness, even though we're looking for Hashem there, and as soon as we get comfortable with the darkness, we just become part of the darkness. So how do you reveal Hashem in a dark world without becoming dark yourself?
Call Him.
What does that mean? It means...
call Hashem.
Yeah, but what does it mean to call Hashem? It means that you always have to strive, you have to yearn for light. In other words, you can't descend into the world of darkness when you don't have a torch, when you don't have a flashlight to find the Hashem in the darkness. In other words, your default, your yearning has to always be for light, even though the purpose isn't to be in the world of darkness. Korach couldn't understand this, by the way. So what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying like this. Of course, it's like this Rebbe told the Chassid, your purpose is in that far-flung area, not here. Here's where the light is. Your purpose is to go and elevate the darkness. But if you get comfortable there, then you're in trouble. You better come running back. As long as you're there and you don't want to be there, you're okay. Same thing, I'll give you another example. We have the 6 days of the week and we have Shabbos. What's the holiest day of the week? Shabbos, hands down. Of course, Shabbos is the holiest, right? But if I asked you a different question, and I said, where do we fulfill the purpose of creation more? Shabbos or during the week? The answer is during the week. Shabbos, we detach from the world. That's not the purpose. Shabbos is, the purpose of the world is to be in the world and to elevate it. So the weekday is where we fulfill our purpose, correct? However, when does it work? When the whole week revolves around Shabbos. You know how we count in Hebrew? Every day, we don't have Sunday, Monday in Hebrew. What do we have? Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni. Yom Rishon to what? First day of what? Of Shabbos. First day towards Shabbos. Second day towards Shabbos. The whole week we yearn for Shabbos. We don't want to leave Shabbos. We have to smell Pesamim because we don't want to leave Shabbos, right? When your whole week, when you don't want to be in the week, you only want to be in Shabbos, then you, when you're in the week, you fulfill your purpose. But if you like the weekday, no good, right? Then you don't fulfill your purpose. You become part of the weekday. There's a beautiful story I once heard with Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik once said, he told a story like this. He lived in a town when he was a little boy. He lived in a town where there were a lot of Hasidim there. A lot of them, yeah. Anyway, he was a young boy, and he was not from a Hasidic family, but he was a young boy. And one time on Motzei Shabbos, and he was playing with his friends or whatever it was, and he missed Ma'ariv. He didn't have the minyan for Ma'ariv, right? So he missed Ma'ariv in the shul, but he was comes from a very religious family. They always daven with a minyan. So he's got to look for a minyan now for Ma'ariv. So he knows, if he goes in one of the Hasidic shuls, they have a custom to have Shalosh Shudas very late. They sing the Gunim and they have shows late, and they, yeah. True. So he goes into the Hasidic shul, and they're in the middle of their Shalosh Shudas. They're in the strength of their tish, and they are singing the Gunim, and there's like, Shabbos is nowhere near over in that shul. Anyway, he's getting a bit impatient. So he tugs on an adult, one of the adults, and he says, excuse me, then Gateman daven and Ma'ariv. When are we going to daven Ma'ariv? So he tells the story, as Rabbi Soloveitchik only could tell a story. He says, this older chassid looked down at me and he said, in Yiddish it sounds much better, I'll say it in Yiddish and I'll translate. He says, was is ingele, du bengst noch en woch? He says, what's wrong, my child? You're yearning for the week? It's good here. What's the rush? Right? In other words, that real appreciation for Shabbos. What are you rushing to go into the week? The week is a dark place. Who needs the week? Right. Eventually, Hashem says, no, enough of Shabbos, you got to go into the week because that's where the purpose is. But it only works when you don't want to be there. Okay? So that's what Korach's mistake is. Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to tell him you need both, which means like this. That's why the answer to both questions was wrong. You, of course, mitzvahs, the Meragli made a big mistake. Because the purpose is not to be in the midbar, the purpose is to be on the physical land. Excuse me, right? But if you get comfortable in the physical land, you're going to be a problem. So the formula goes like this. You have to be in the world of physicality. In the world, we have to plow the field and sow the field and work. And it's a tough world out there. But where's your yearning going to be? Where are you going to be the most comfortable? And where do you have to do every day to energize yourself so you don't get lost? In the world of Torah, in the world of Tefillah. That's what the Gemara says. You've got to start the day with Torah. Start the world with Tefillah, Torah. And then you can go into the world. And when you're in the world, you always got to yearn back. Wait, when can I leave this already? And go back to the Beis HaMedrash and go back to find a new shir. Right? So that's why you need both. Otherwise, the formula won't work. The purpose is in the world of Gashmias. It'll only work if you don't want to be in the world of Gashmias, if you're yearning for the world of Ruchnias. So a default of a Yid has to be, I want to be in the world of Ruchnias, but I have to be in the world of Gashmias just to fulfill my purpose. And whenever I can, I go back and recharge my batteries. That was the answer to Korach. Now, let me finish my favorite Vartoira on that. Once you understand that, so now comes something that the Rebbe once explained, the most beautiful thing, about the name Korach. The name Korach, right? Sorry? It does come from Korach, which is a whole another. That's another Vartoira, but not for now. Okay. So Korach is three letters. Kuf, Resh, Ches, correct? Kuf, Resh, Ches, right? Kuf, Resh, Ches. Look at these three letters and tell me there's another letter that all of these are similar to but different. Hey. Yep, perfect. Hey. Hey is in the box down, right? See this? In other words, all these three letters have a top, a right-hand thing, and then a left. But what's the difference? The kuf, the left thing goes down, below the other two, right? The resh doesn't have the third one. And the ches has it, but it's attached to the top, right? So that everyone's explained a beautiful idea. The formula I just explained to you is the hay. Let's understand. So the three lines of the hay refer to the three ways we express ourselves. Machshava, thought, dibur, speech, and maisa, action. Right? We wake up in the morning, we think about Hashem, or we daven, we think about Hashem, we say the words of Torah and Tefillah, and with action we do mitzvahs, right? In those three, so the top one is thought, the right-hand one is dibur, is speech, and the left-hand one, which is detached, we'll see why in a minute, is action. Okay? Behavior. Now, of those three, machshava and dibur, thought and speech, are the spiritual ones. That's where we express spirituality. That's how we daven, that's how we learn, that's how we meditate. It's a spiritual part of who we are, right? Action is the world of the physical, the world of behavior. Light a Shabbos candle, we do business, we put a mezuzah up. Yeah, that's the world of action. Okay. So let's see how kuf, resh, ches are all no good, and the way to do it is the hay. Kuf, the way it works like this. On a very simple level, when we behave, our behavior must always be in sync with what, like you said before, with what we think and what we speak. In other words, you have to learn halacha, you have to learn how we should act and how we should behave. So obviously the Korach, the kuf of Korach, is a deviation of that. It's when the world of action starts to create its own path. It goes out of the borders of thought and speech, which means it's not governed by the halacha, it's not governed by what the Torah's instructions. It goes out on its own path, and that's then once you start that, you start the slippery slope to becoming completely against Hashem. Yeah? That's the kuf. What's the resh? The resh is the guy that says, well, okay, if spirituality is so important, I don't need the world of action. I'll just lock myself up, I'll detach myself from the world, I'll just daven and learn all day and be spiritual and finish, leave the world out. So the resh doesn't have the left thing altogether. There's no action. No physical, only spiritual. Big mistake. Right? What's the hay? Sorry, what's the ches? So the ches, one would imagine, is good. The ches says, I'm not going to go below the borders, right? The left leg is within the borders of the chshava and dibur of thought and speech. I will only do what Torah tells me to do, but I'm going to be very heavily involved in the world of action, which is what I'm supposed to do. So I have both. I have the world of spiritual, I have the world of action. I'm good, right? This is what we're supposed to do. So what's wrong with the ches? Oh. The wrong with the ches is that it's not detached from the top. What does that mean? So let me explain like this. Exactly the formula I explained to you before. I'll give you a little bit of an example just to make it even stronger. If you have someone that's a business person, right? And he comes to shul and he has a rav. A rav is a big tzaddik, is a big talmud chacham. But the rav is much more involved in the spiritual, correct? So how does it work? Who's more important? The Rosh Hashiva, the Rav, the Tzaddik, or the businessman? So we find that, who gets an important aliyah? The Rav, right? Who gets mafter when he needs to? The Rav, yeah? Who does the businessman ask shailas to? Who does he defer to? The Talmud Chacham, the Rebbe, the Tzaddik, the Rav, whatever, right? On the one hand. On the other hand, but it's not so simple. Who actually is fulfilling the mission in this world more than the businessman or the Rav? The businessman. He's the one that's in the trench. He's the one that's bringing Hashem into the world. When does it work? By the formula I told you before. The gap in the hay is the world of action. And the gap represents a less than. I'm yearning. I'm incomplete. The problem with the ches is that the guy in the world of action thinks he's comfortable. He's as important as the spiritual. After all, the guy says, I'm going into this physical world, I'm equal. In fact, I'm more important than the Rav or the Tzaddik. Why? Because the purpose is in me. I'm fulfilling the purpose. So he gets very comfortable in the world of action. When you get comfortable in the world of action, it's like the guy with the Hasidic Rebbe, it's no good. It doesn't work. The formula is to be the hay. The hay means you've got to have spirituality. You've got to go out into the world of the world of action, but you always got to see a gap. When you're in the world of action, you've got to feel far. You've got to feel uncomfortable. You've got to feel, oh, you know, I need to get back to my Rosh Hashiva. I need to get back to my Shir. My Daf HaYomishi. I need to get back to my Chumashir. I need to get back. I'm uncomfortable here. There's a gap. There's a yearning. I feel like out of my comfort zone. I'm not comfortable here. That's the hay. The hay has a gap in it to show the discomfort. When you're in the world of action and you feel uncomfortable and you always want to get back to the world of Ruchnius, then it works. That's the hay. So the koirach, kuf resh ches, is a deviation of the hay. The kuf is when the action just does its own thing, that's the good. The resh is the spiritual guy does one action. And the ches is a person, yes, I'm going to the world of action, but he feels very comfortable in that world. He doesn't feel any yearning. He says, on the contrary, I'm doing my thing. I'm just as big. I'm better than the Rosh Hashiva. I'm better than the Ruchnius because I'm doing actually the way Hashem wants me to do it. I'm going into the physical world. It doesn't work when you do that. You got to be a hay. You got to go into the physical world, but feel a gap, feel a yearning, and always want to reconnect to the world of Ruchnius, and then it works. That's how the relationship between the spiritual world and the physical world have to work together. All right, we'll stop there.